Recording.
Good morning.
One, two, three. Here we go.
Back again.
Jem and Justin in the morning.
It's your morning wake up call. Jem and Justin, parts department. CNC talk, robot standing rods, but we always end up on air. From Australia to Portland, the tools, the tech, the digital friends. Parts department, let's go.
Oh yeah, it's been a while since we had a jingle.
Ah. Just don't have buttons to push anymore.
I know.
Where did my costume go?
How you going?
Good. I put some look, you can see it. My door is always like leaking in a lot of sound just throughout the day. My air compressor is of course behind the wall. And so I looked at it, I was like, oh, it's got a giant like bend to it at the top, so there was like 8 to 10 mil at the top of the door of a, not like seeing light, but just like basically an air gap. So I tried to put some this stuff,
tape seal,
what's it called,
foam seal stuff. Yep, makes squish good. Yes,
but I can only do so much of it because it's tapered, and so it's kind of like, now of course it's really hard to shut the door. And so as I'm looking for doors for the where I'm expanding into the other shop, I'm like, maybe we need a new door because this one is a piece of crap.
Is are the machines running now? Because I can't hear any.
No. It's really good. No, there's literally nothing running, of course, today.
Right, okay.
Ricky might have something to run later, but it's the excitement of the morning so far. And trying to finish financing for this machine purchase that I did truly sign for on the air last week. Still going on, still working through 2-3 banks. And as I noted in the show notes, one of them just straight up lied to me right before we got on here. Oh. Just some nasty terms. I don't know how things go there for you, but they can throw in all these fun, like, we can take your house and your home and all these things. And the worst one that I'm trying to get removed is adverse, like, basically, like, for no good reason. Just if they think you're going to not be able to pay your loan, they can just call it at any time.
This is what Saunders was talking about on Dylan's pod,
yes.
Right? I'd just been listening to that. Which I'd literally
me too.
About halfway through that. That's funny.
Oh, I was listening to Saunders' video about it. I can.
Oh, okay.
Right. It's been super helpful to go back through, but that's probably the worst of them. There's also another thing called COJ that I don't remember what the term is. That and the loan guy that I've been dealing with goes, oh, they won't change these docs. They're laser pro docs, and they're used all over the country by banks. And I said, well, turns out I've signed multiple of these with different banks in the past that don't have these terms, as well as my friend who referred me don't have these terms in their loans with you. So I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, I didn't.
Okay,
yes,
listen to this.
Never a particularly fun game, but I hope you get some finance sorted out.
Well, I've got my lawyer on it. GPT found every possible terrible clause. They actually make it sound so much worse, you know? Like, I don't know if you've done that where you dump in a contract
have,
and it's like, it's like, you're going to lose everything. It's like, wait, is this normal? Yes, this is normal.
You're going to die destitute in the gutter. Oh, yeah. That's what we're expecting. That's fine.
Everybody else always signs the same loans. Anyway, that's my morning. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm a little frustrated by the robots. I thought I'd fixed them. So last week, I was riding the high of having automated that process with the sanding. And then by Monday, I'd broken the robot and corrupted something. They're really sensitive about like power cycling them. I rushed I think what happened is I rushed a file transfer, or a file transfer failed, and hung the system, and I'd had to do just like a hard isolator off. And they're really finicky about doing that, and they complain uproariously when you turn them back on and threaten, you know, I'll never work again. Which system do you want to restore from? Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, a lot of stuffing around with that this week, trying to fix it. And got onto, anyway, long story short, I thought I'd fixed it yesterday. I got a secondhand flash disk. I put it in there, booted it up successfully. And so I turned the robot off last night, think, cool, it's working again. All I have to do when I get back next week is set up the IP address so I can FTP to it again and blah, 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 reconfigure a few things. And I turned it on this morning just out of curiosity. I had 20 minutes to spare and it's not booting. It's stuck in its boot cycle again. So I'm like, no. I thought I'd solve this. So yeah, a little frustrated because I thought I was back in action, but alas, not. But yeah, earlier in the week, I thought I'd totally bricked it. I was like, when I put that note in the show notes, I was like, oh, this robot cactus, like it won't even turn on.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. Like the memory, like I've never had an internal memory problem with the mill, but I think I mentioned before that I had never in my life had a problem with, properly eject a hard drive situations.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Any computer ever, or any drive, until I started using compact flash drives with the mill. And literally every time you don't properly eject a compact flash card for the mill, it corrupts and causes problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's probably something similar. Yeah, it's like
sensitivity is.
I don't know what they are. They're like a 2.5-inch flash disk. I don't know if that's a solid state thing or what, or what's actually in there, or whether there's a little platter in there. But yeah, I think I corrupted that one, and maybe somehow I've corrupted another one. I don't know. Anyway, but the positive bit of this story is that a friend dropped in to play table tennis during the week at lunchtime, and you know, we had a game. And then afterwards, I was showing him the robots, and I was like, "Hang on, you're like an ex-industrial engineer, aren't you? You know this stuff. This is your world." And he was like, "Oh, kind of. I never played with robots, but you know, PLCs and Siemens controls and all of that, like very familiar." He didn't have any solution, but what he did do is he pushed me to actually follow up and ask for help. He was like, "Just call ABB, get a support ticket. They'll charge you lots of money, but you know, they'll resolve it quickly." Like, cool, all right, I'll do that. And then instead of doing that, I went and contacted this place in Melbourne that deals in secondhand ABB, because I noticed they had support on their website. And I had this phone call with this awesome, I don't know if they're Swedish, maybe Swedish accent guy, this awesome dude, super knowledgeable, who was really interested in what I was doing. He was like, there's not many people sanding with that, with these robots in Australia. Super cute. Send me a video of what you're trying to do. He was just curious and very helpful. And he was like, I think we're scrapping that same model, like tomorrow we'll pull the flash disk out of that and just send it to you, and it might work, it might not, just see what happens. So yeah, I'm pretty happy to have made that contact, because they're going to be super valuable, I think. But he did refer to my 2400s, which are the small baby ones, which I haven't done anything with. He was like, yes, they'll make good boat anchors. It's about all they're good for.
Why? Just like their capacity, or?
Just their age.
Problems?
Their age. He was saying like that. They're one generation older than my big ones. He was like, it's just, that stuff's 30 years old almost. Like, that software generation is archaic and very hard to like reinstall and get going again. So yeah, anyway, good contact, some progress, but then backwards again. So frustrated.
Yeah.
I just want to sand things.
Yeah. What, is there anything to do differently if it comes back to being normal again?
Just be No, not really, because I don't know, just try and not end up in just a situation where I have to, I'd like kill the power, I guess. I don't know, have good backups, just have some a bit more infrastructure around me, like have a I've ordered like one of those IDE to USB adapters so I can actually plug one of these flash drives in and properly back it up to a computer because I don't have any backups
Oh,
of
there you
them.
go.
So just yeah, do some little things like that. Have a bit more stuff and systems and backups and yeah, then I should be okay, I think. Because you know, I'm dealing with old tech, so I need to expect these things. I
Yeah.
guess it's not a new Haas control with a touch screen.
Well, we'll see if I can find a bank that's not shit.
Yeah, fingers crossed. So what happens? Like you've signed a deal, right? What happens if you can't get finance? Is it conditional on you getting finance that it goes through?
I don't know. I assume, I mean, like, assume I will find the worst or the best of the worst of these offers for financing and take a shitty one, I guess. But like, I've got a few. I just, it is what it is, I suppose.
You've got options,
Trying to
basically.
find, you should, yeah. Yeah, I've already paid a down payment that's out of my bank account and holding the machine. Everything else is pretty much arranged and happening, so I don't know. Did I say what it was publicly last time? I forget.
Maybe you didn't actually.
Which probably wasn't hard to guess, but it's a UMC 500.
SS.
Which is, yes, SS, which is used, incredibly lightly used. Just kind of waiting on final details. And what's interesting about buying a used machine, my assumption is it's like more or less a couple days after things get settled and money lands in the right bank accounts, it's like just on its way. Like, it's not like I'm not building it.
Yeah,
No
nice.
wait. Would be funny if it wasn't though. It was like took longer than a new machine to get.
Did have a moment during the week thinking about your potential new machine, and can't remember why I got onto thinking about it, but maybe I was listening to something else that made me think of
You were
just
listening to
like
the bomb, I think.
that's right, I was listening to the bomb and I got quite excited on your behalf about like in process probing, like fusion connected probing cycles and stuff, and just yeah, I was listening to the bomb, that's right. And it's like damn, it'd be amazing to have that sort of fusion machine interconnectedness. It sounds delightful. Just in time, yeah, it was. It was John, the bomb Johns were talking about, like in yeah, like doing little spot checks in with like probing and being able to feed data back to the program, and sounds
Yeah.
delightful.
The stuff that Grimsmo does is like so far beyond what I'm interested in at this point, like with like macro probing. And I saw some joke. What was that? I think it was Machinist, maybe a YouTube I was listening or watching, and it was like their partner was a actual like programmer or software developer, and so they would see some of their macros for probing sometimes. Oh, it was on within tolerance. It was saying how it writes these if then statements basically all like in a bunch of sequences, and the partner was like those are so basic, like you should do something besides use if then statements. I don't know, if it works, it works.
Has the potential of having put the order in triggered your sort of thinking in terms of what you want to do, what you want to make, like
Yeah.
what you'll do when it arrives?
I mean, one of the products that I've showed you that we're working on, I was coming back to finishing, like I've joked, it was like I'm working on the fifth feature. And this has been months in the development of just thinking through how it would work. And just yesterday I was working on that feature and I just had this realization of like, I don't know if you think about this. Sometimes you're designing something and you go, ah, can't do that on a three axis, or like your brain just like immediately disconnects it. And I was like, wait a second. I don't need another fixture for this. And there's like two different situations where I was like, oh my God, this is just like a slight tilt of the table.
Yeah. Awesome. That's cool. I had that. Yeah. I've had that a little bit this week as well with some, got myself into making cat accessories for our threadboard walls. And it was one of those jobs where I quoted it not really knowing how I was going to make it. And so now I'm in this spot of like, Jem designed himself, like quoted himself into a hole and has to design his way out of it. And then I had, same thing. I had the realization of like, hang on, I've got like a six-axis machining robot. I can just cut that hole after the glue-up being done. Amazing.
Right. This morning we were talking about a totally different product that we've thought about for years and trying to think of like how we would make it. And I was like, well, we got a whole different way to make stuff potentially now. I mean, it's funny to like week like three of trying to make this finalized, but in my brain, it's turned into closer to being a real thing of all the discussion about it. And like, yet it's not finished yet. So.
No, totally. It's definitely a thing though, like what you said about your brain, just like switching off those options because they're not accessible. It's going to take some time to override that and sort of get into a different way of thinking.
I wonder if the contrast is wanting to make things after you get used to the five-axis world, like you just don't want to ever go back to three-axis. You're like, oh, I got to make a fixture? What's a soft jaw?
Yeah, I wonder. Don't know. I mean, Saunders seems quite committed to his three-axis and robot idea.
In a certain way, that's kind of the same thing, isn't it? You know, like,
yeah.
You just kind of reverse the thinking of what's changing the axis.
Yeah. Yeah. You're externalizing that rotation.
He brought this up, I don't even know, a year ago, probably more. Like, as soon as it goes past, like, 2 months, it turns into like it's probably a year ago at least, right? And he brought up wanting to expand the tool capacity of some machine, I think it was a UMC they had, by hand loading them, like going to a pause and hand loading tools in. And something about that triggered for me like, oh, what if you could just load them with a robot at that point, you know, like, and it gets to be complicated, but also you are doing things with robots that maybe you didn't think you would do, and I'm starting to like have that tease of robots sound interesting, you know, like what could you do with, could you have 200 tools that way?
Like the robots loading, doing manual tool changes basically. Yeah, I think it just comes down to whatever you can think up and program at a certain point. Yeah, that's cool.
On the on that note, did we ever talk about the 100 tool Speedio?
No.
I don't know if we did. They came up with this crazy new, I'll show you a link to it. It's you know how Speedios have that like dial, watch dial of tools that spins really fast? They basically took two more and put them on the sides. So it's like kind of a three-headed beast, and there's a like an open spot on the dial. I don't know if there's two or one, but it basically has a tool arm that swaps them from the side to the main dial, which is just like the coolest.
It's such a crazy, like, crazy image. The three, fun. Like,
right. So cool.
Super cool. So they must look ahead in the program and go, cool, you need tool 99.
You would preload think, yeah.
Preload it into that right. spare spot, and then it's like,
yep,
boom.
Yep.
Super cool.
When I was shopping for machines, I would get DMs different things, and somebody's like, well, if you're going to go to UMC, and I was asking about UMCs, you should just get a Brother. And if you're going to get a Brother, just get the Hunter tool. And I you start to look at the prices, and it's like, oh, you mean $300,000? Sure. Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah, sure. It makes our little dinky machine tool project look like such a toy. The pencil, have I shown you a photo of the pencil sharpener all mounted up in its plywood box, the baby one, the PS2?
No.
This is a render, but just, yeah, thinking about machine tool design, and then I'm like, oh, yeah, look at our toy. Look at it. Little printed thing. My first CNC.
It looks like a bit like a...
Oh, yeah, it does too.
Shapoko made yeah. a... What was it Shapoko's called?
Bantam? It's Bantam scene. What were those little ones?
It's cool. It's a little hard to tell what I'm looking at.
Mm. I'll send you a video later.
Little trim routers.
Trim routers, yeah. Radius.
Oh, I see. That's
mounted up in the box and... very cleverly, Rodia has designed a kind of what the word is like dead length collet. Maybe you know how collets suck in a little bit when you tighten them, like it,
yeah.
The tool length changes if you're putting a tool in a collet. Rodia's designed a, I think dead length is the correct term, not sure. 3D printed collet system to hold the dowel stock in this machine. So that when you hand tighten the collet, it doesn't change the length. It's quite ingenious. You can kind of see it in this shot, the little 3D printed hand knurled thing at the top there. But yeah, I just, when they turned up with it the other day, last week when they were here, I was just like, damn, that's, you have a good brain. Like just being able to work through this problem and go like, cool, I'm going to design a collet system from scratch that does what I want it to do so the part doesn't move. It's like, that is beyond me. Very clever.
And it's all plastic, call it?
It's all printed, yeah.
Printable?
Yeah, it's all printable.
Interesting.
Oh, and amazingly stiff, like good part engagement for what we're doing anyway, like cutting timber threads.
Oh, you just gave me an idea.
Ample. Ooh. Ample engagement. Pretty cool.
Title. That's interesting. I was just talking about a... Oh, my God. It's real. Look at that.
What's real?
I was just...
Oh, yeah. That's the real one.
Talking. Yep. You sent me a rendering, and then I was like, oh, that's going to be interesting to see. And then you just sent me the real thing right after it. And I was like, what the... I was just talking about a solution for something we're working on, and... Part of the concept was similar to ER collets in the way that it compresses and you have something that captures it, and I hadn't thought of it the way you're describing it. I'm copying your idea. No.
Cool. It is a thing. Like we came across the concept of it. I think, yeah, whatever it's called. Yeah, dead length collet. It's a thing. I don't know if Rodi has used the same logic or not, but yeah, it's an existing
idea. Isn't that kind of like those, Dylan always talks about them, the expensive smash together collets. I feel like they have a set length inside them somehow.
Rego fix?
That's it. Rego.
Yeah, I've never looked at how that actually works. I have no idea.
Infinite cost collets.
Infinite cost. What?
There's a brand name for you.
Infinite. Yeah, no, I've never looked into those. They sound good, though.
Mm-hmm. We've been starting to consider the, I mean, hopefully I don't walk all this back again. I have some hesitation, but I figure I just talk about it like it's talking to a friend. Nobody else is listening. We've been starting to consider what we do with the space where the mill is, since we're unloading the metal machine on this side. And we had a long discussion yesterday about, do you keep the room? And to get it out, we have to take down one wall, which is kind of designed for that, kind of not. Like, it's just a little slightly destructive, and it can easily go back together. But it's like, all right, well, we also maybe have to shorten the room. Then it's like, when you start to shorten it, all of a sudden you've kind of touched too much, where it's like, do we even want it? What would we do with a room?
You know? Yeah. Like,
but it's there, you know? Like, what if you don't need the space for other things right away, why would you take it? I don't know. It's just...
Yeah, I know what you mean. I'd tear it down. That would be my default, but I know what you mean. I mean, what is it? It's like timber stud and core flute or something. Like, what? It's that transparent twin wall polycarb or something.
Yep. Stud, kind of wide spacing stud walls. I mean, it just supports itself. There's no other structure to it.
I would be flat packing that and saving the materials for another day myself. If you have to partially pull it apart anyway.
Surprisingly cheap. I think it was under $2,000 in the end. I want to say it was like $1,500. The Coroplast, the like twin wall stuff, was the most expensive part, and it wasn't that bad.
Yeah. Yeah, we've used quite a lot of that polycarb twin wall in like studio fit outs when, you know, Laura's business, Ironside Studios, when we were building studio walls, we used a lot of that stuff. It's great. Used to buy it from like grow room suppliers.
Yeah. Right.
Kind of love it. It's also annoying to work with, because as soon as you cut it, you get the plastic chips down into the flutes, and it's near impossible to get them out again. And say, I have successfully machined it on the CNCs as well, just with like super sharp carbide, brand new, and like, yeah, but got quite good results on it.
I was looking at yesterday, trying to like analyze how we put it together. Excuse me. And for some reason, I don't know how this happened, but some flies, like normal annoying flies, crawled down one of the flutes, and there's like four like laid eggs. And they're just stuck in there, like entombed.
Yep.
Luckily there's only three, I think, in one spot. Like they went to go save, like Steve went down. They're like, no, Steve, let me save you. And they like crawled down after, and then the other three died too.
So yeah, what are you going to do with the space, man? Your shipping station's looking awesome, by the way. Hot trot. Dang. So clean.
Yeah, it's coming together with putting a little... I don't remember. This is probably before we started talking. So when we were doing the NACWAL development, I was looking into all these different options for that, like... laminate on one side, laminate, you know, like back around the other kind of thing on plywood.
Yeah.
And as part of some problem solving, we were putting a thicker backer on one side than the front. Mm. And the people, the vendors, the everybody involved was super like, do you know what this is going to do, right? And I was like, no, not really. And they're like, oh, well, it's going to warp for sure. And I was like, really? Just because it's different thickness, it's covered on both sides. And so this sheet, we got like two. We tested one. It was fine. It didn't really do anything at the time. And we pulled it out because I was just sitting there like not being used. And I was like, well, this will be a good top for the shipping station area. And I pull it out, and it is like tacoed, like potato chipped up on all the corners, just as predicted. And I mean, I believed him, but also I was just like, I hadn't seen it happen. So it was interesting. We bolted it down and it's fine, but finally got a use out of some basically trash material.
Nice. Yeah, I saw your reel when I unbricked my phone this morning and was like, oh, it's just so tidy, so clean. Where do you find the time? But you've got, like, does Ricky work on the sort of shop lean improvement stuff too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Nice. I mean, I'm usually the one to go, hey, we should change this. And either that's enough to get him going on something, or in this case, like, we had never worked with extrusion. So I kind of had to tackle getting it going. And then once it's there, my hope is that he'll find ways to use it better than, I don't know, I've started with. Right now, it's just mostly holding a lot of boxes. And then there's a couple worktops, more or less. But, you know, we did kind of need, there was always a situation where, like, you're packing a box and, like, the stuff was kind of, like, behind you to the side when you're trying to ship stuff. So it is nice to have more space. And it needs work still. It's got a lot to be figured out.
Yeah.
Nice. Slowly happening when I feel like there's enough time to be working on that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I find it really hard to justify the time at the moment. But then, you know, in the same breath, I'll blow 3 hours in Grasshopper at night making crazy, like, singularity detection graphs. So it's like, it's just, where are you spending your time, Jim? What's important? Didn't really need to do that. But it was nerdy and fun.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Just not enough hours in the day.
The singularity graph will have a giant spike, I assume, when there's a singularity.
It's not that dramatic, unfortunately. Maybe I can find a way to make it more dramatic. It's just when axis 4 and axis 5 lines intersect in a central danger zone, and there's the risk of an erratic wrist flip where the robot gets to a point where there are sort of infinite ways to solve it, and it goes, oh, I'm going to go here, and go flip.
Right.
And flip unexpectedly. So I was,
and that'll just happen if you don't catch it, right?
Yeah. Can just happen, and there's no way to 100% know whether it'll happen or not in simulation, but you can do things, which is why I was building it. I was like, it's partly just super nerdy fun in Grasshopper, but also, like, I know that functionality exists in, like, the, you know, professional robot programming software. So I was like, I'm sure I can make a dinky version of that. I've got all the joint values. Yeah. I'll just map it.
Interesting.
And graph it out. And yeah, I forced the robot into a position in Grasshopper last night. And I was like, cool, this is a risk. I know that, like, I can just see in the arm of the robot that's, like, a potential singularity risk at that point. And I could see it in the graph of, like, yep, those lines are intersecting. They're close to the danger zone. So I think it'll be useful for programming as I get into more complex stuff. Oh, no, he's got a droopy stand.
I've got a droopy mic. I can't keep it up.
But I was working on that last night, and I was like, I don't know who to talk to about this anymore. Like, I'm going down, like, this ultra nerdy rabbit hole. I'm running out of people that know what the hell I'm doing, or, like, where this is going. And I showed Laura, and she's like smiling and nodding.
I mean, I'm following it, but I don't think I could be helpful.
No, like, I know. I knew it.
Like, I imagine you in some, like, TV show where you're, like, kind of in a space setting. And you're like, only my AI can help me now. And you're just, like, got a headpiece on and just traveling towards the singularity.
Thanks to someone during the week. Shout out to someone on Instagram who reminded me about Notebook LM, because I'd kind of forgotten about it. I'd done lots with it. When I first started talking about getting the robots, doing lots of research with it, but then had kind of stopped using it. But someone on Insta DM'd me and was like, when I was having the problem with the robot and trying to reverse engineer all the like maintenance PDFs and stuff, I was like, that's right, that's awesome. So I loaded up Notebook LM with like all the manuals and maintenance guides and, you know, like thousands and thousands of pages of documentation, and like the answers were just immediately so much better than what I was getting out of even my trained sim theory agents, which had access to all the same documents. But however the Notebook LM thing works, like the quality of, just immediately better. I was like, cool, you're actually reading the PDFs and referring me to the right bit. Thank you. That's much more useful. So I then went ahead and made a Grasshopper reference one in Notebook as well. It's just like dumped a whole lot of Grasshopper documentation into a new project in Notebook, and now I've got a massive reference guide in there as well for like referring to and learning new tricks, which is cool.
Have you tried the Sim Theory podcast maker?
No, I didn't.
I haven't tried it yet.
No. Minimal
sell it
interest.
It's pretty useful.
I know.
It seems like the same concept, right?
Yeah, same thing. And I legitimately found that useful in Notebook when I was researching the robot stuff, of like being able to listen to a podcast about it. But I think the thing that I found best about that was the interactive functionality of being able to stop the hosts and interject with a question. That was by far the coolest feature of that Notebook podcast thing.
It's like when we're live podcasting here. a little interjection. I have to try. I don't know. Sometimes I'm just really skeptical about the value, or that it'll be true. Like what that it's trying to provide is useful. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, the other thing that just in, I guess maybe that's not useful for you in this case, but there were the Sim Theory guys were saying that the podcast maker will create a script for you, but you can also provide your own script or like outline that's more true to what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. It's interesting. I don't have a use case for it, don't quite see the appeal yet in that functionality. But banana, bloody hell. Those images I sent you.
How many times did it take to get that?
Which one? The kit of parts one.
You sent me the four kit of parts ones.
I gave it, like, I was giving it a reference image, and it's, you know, and then asking it to use that to get the geometry right. So like, I haven't tried rendering kit of parts for over a year, and then I was like, haven't tried this new nano banana thing, better give it a go. And like, yeah, it's still obviously rendered, but for the first time ever, it's like, cool, that's my product. It's got all the chamfer and the shadow lines and the details. And
is that based off an existing image, probably? Oh, you gave it. Yeah, you gave it the image.
I gave it a reference image. Yeah. But interestingly, the first shot, it got it completely wrong. I was like, no. Actually look at the reference image, that's important to me. Make sure you get the features of the furniture. But then the one that really blew my mind was where I took I had a site visit, post-installation photo of that big set of shelves we did recently with the staircase, and I was like still building rubble on the floor and a ladder and, you know, crap everywhere. And I was like, just tidy this up for me. Improve the lighting, blah, blah, blah. And it just wild. Like,
it's so accurate.
Yeah, the way it re-renders the shadows, and it's nuts.
A wire mesh involved, which I think would be really challenging for an AI to reinterpret and then make accurate again. And it's like basically flawless. Going back and forth between them.
Yes, very.
It kept your uncovered outlets on the wall.
I know.
Accuracy.
Yeah, pretty wild. Crazy Marble.
I sent you some of my attempts.
What did you send me?
Coming back to... Ooh, yeah, your other one's even better. Well, what I sent you was... So I gave it an original rendering of this product, which we have real ones of, that we're soon to come out with. And it completely failed to put it into realistic context. Like, they're just, like, hilariously
they're quite funny. They look at the threaded MDF holes in the spoil board are amazing.
Yeah, true.
I just noticed... It's like, but looks exactly like my thread board. The rest of it, yeah, it's hilarious.
Like, it put, like, bite marks in, right? But they're, like, they don't make any sense, and, like, it's not attached, and there's just weird shit all over the place.
This product is out, right? Is it available?
No.
It's not?
No.
Have we talked about it?
On hold forever. Damn. Yeah, it's one of those that just, like...
No!
We realized in the last... couple days, actually I think it was today, we talked about yesterday, and then I was like, oh, why did we not put that out yet? And then, like, we started talking about it, and I was like, oh, those things. And I was like, we just need to do this is stupid, like, it's not worth withholding for this long. So
I'll be your first customer. I need these for the robot. Okay, now.
That's true. Send them.
Have we talked about it, or you've kept this under wraps, haven't you?
I guess let's talk about it.
We don't need to. We don't need to talk about it now.
Have to put them out, and then I will have to put them out. Gives me a week. All right, announcing today.
Live, exclusive.
What I'm calling the Fang work holding clamps, and they basically allow you to hold mostly wood. I'm calling them like Op 1 work holding for routers, right? Like you screw down with a biting force on one edge of like a pretty thick piece of stainless steel that's bent, and it holds your stuff to the bed. We've kind of like made our own versions of these before, and I know there's at least one other company that makes something similar, but they're not like as easy to just buy on their own. So they'd be in sets, and they have little, like, we have a little accessory or hardware thing, which is what we were kind of being held up by before. Was like, we were testing it in all these different ways, and then we're like, oh, we don't have every little detail figured out, and they just got like shelved.
I think they're cool, and I remember when you first showed them to me, I was like, yes, simple, awesome. Mm-hmm. Want them now. The kind of thing that, you know, ever since I started running 3-axis CNC machines almost 20 years ago, I was like, just need more like simple little work holding things like this. And I've kind of hacked my way through my own solutions over the years. Yeah. But there's just not much out there to do what that does.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So we've had a bunch of them made. We've dialed in, we do the engravings ourselves on them. Ricky's finishing them up today, and we've got box packaging and stuff. So it's just, I basically got needing to make a little video, and I was trying to make some images of it. And being lazy and knowing that we were going to talk about Nano Banana, I was like, maybe this can help me. And it was just like, putting them into context, it was just completely ridiculous. Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, he's one of the biggest hurdles of trying to get, I think, AI tech to do physical things, or either generate images or even just understand sort of physical reality. I've found that a lot with the robots, of just like, how do you wrap its little mechanical mind around the kind of the proprioception or the kinematics of something? It's right. Like, it's quite a challenge.
I mean, there's this other one that, for example, this is such good audio content. I was just trying to get it to rotate, and I was, you know, like, I feel like I'm fairly decent at describing how I want an object to be manipulated, maybe more than like the average person. Just, you know how I would like this to be rotated counterclockwise this many degrees. And it just like could not wrap its mind around doing that. It would like flip it over and like turn it the wrong way. And then all of a sudden, like the context would completely change to another, you know, it's just the same old problems over and over. But the quality, I think what's most impressive about Nano Banana is taking an original image, and it seems like it makes a 3D model of it in its like consciousness and reinterpret that accurately really well.
Yeah, pretty nuts. Pretty crazy.
Like, are those last two, if I lightly touched them up, something you would put on a product page, or are they kind of ridiculous?
Yeah, totally. That top one particularly. Sorry, people. Audio content. It's not even on YouTube, the stuff we're sharing. But cool. Yeah, it's like it's a tight. It looks like your other product images, like your rendered, clean, tidy. Pretty amazing.
All right. Good. Okay.
Almost as good as the like a Bogan beer swilling ad that I'm about to make for it in Nano Banana.
Ooh. Excited. Yeah, we're going to put it in awesome. Right here. Put a clip in for you.
Yeah. Beep-boop.
So what's the... With the PS2...
Yes.
Do you have any... I think I've asked you this before. Is there like any developing timelines for something? Beta? Alpha?
Beta. Trying to get Rody is like very close to just having it at a point where we can run, you know, a few hundred parts and just try and break it and work out what needs fixing, basically.
Yeah.
So they sent me videos of it machining test parts yesterday, so we're pretty close to just being able to like fang it, as we would say in Australia. Just fang it. There's your tagline for your ad, actually. Just fang it, man.
That's actually going to be our title. Just fang it. It's perfect.
but then yeah, just still having conversations with potential partners around the world of who's going to get one first and how that's all going to work. And they're pretty open conversations. you know, the best relationship I have is in the US, but you guys are a bin fire, and I don't really feel like sending equipment to the US right now. So I don't know. Don't know, man. Meanwhile, yeah, we'll just keep working on it. Get it to a point where it's running production parts, and then we can prove out what needs to be improved. Because it's quite a cheap machine to build. Like, obviously, Rody has put a huge amount of labor in. No, a huge amount of design and labor has gone into it. But, like, the BOM part count for it is, you know, relatively inexpensive. So, if we need to, we can spin up another one quite quickly, a V2. Or multiples. So just keep having those conversations and see what happens.
For sure. But
what? Sent you some marketing material.
Oh, it's good. Isn't that one particularly ridiculous that like the hold down screw is through the material?
Yeah. That's not the thing. It just doesn't understand the core concept of what.
I kept saying the teeth need to be perpendicular or biting into the side of the wood, and it just kept like putting it on, like slapping it on the side or on top. What's the other thing? One of the funny things, hopefully it doesn't turn into be a problem. Are you familiar with like laying work holding? You see other people, machinists with L-A-N-G.
A Lang. Work holding. Yeah.
Lang Technic something, I think is what that's called.
Yeah.
It's one of those fun we don't put our prices public scenarios, and you can, I think, only buy it direct from them. And there's like no secondhand market that I can find. So to put on top of the UMC 500, I bought called a grid plate, or a quick point 96 grid plate, twofold round, 384 by 27. And it matches up with the mounting slots, and it's $3,600 for this one piece of steel. Fairly like complicated ish internals, where you can screw one hex, basically like a bolt head, on the outside edge, and it locks or unlocks all of the mounting holes at the same time.
Jeez.
Pretty sweet. And it's like, you know, super repeatable and all the fun stuff that like that. And then the system of like the size of the, well, what do they call it? It's just called 96, which must be the spacing of them. Like you can get like cheaper work holding that goes on top of it. But anyway, I put that onto the loan for the machine. And so it accidentally got ordered before we finished the loan. And so it's going to arrive tomorrow. So I'll have this $3,600 work holding plate that just has nowhere to go.
Fancy. 96 millimeter. Yeah. That's the same as FezTool MFT hull centers. Interesting. I asked the robots the other day of like, why the hell is FezTool MFT 96 mil and not 100 millimeters? And it gave me this long explanation of like, well, 96 divides by bloody, bloody, blah, these numbers, like it's, you know, you get far more sort of permutations of like work holding options if you use 96 centers rather than 100 millimeter centers, because it's a more better numberer for these reasons. I was like, oh, okay, fair enough. Still going to use 100.
Round. Yeah, I honestly don't know. It doesn't describe that. I don't know. There's two. There's 96 and 50 something, I think. 52. Yeah, I've seen, like, I can go and get basically these cheap little Zindian, you know, not that this won't fit on one, but
no, I've got one of those. They're so
sized
cute.
Ones that would work. No, so cute. Basically just holds my brush on my desk, because we've never gotten it. We've figured out a way around needing it, basically.
Yeah, anyway. Nice. Sick. Yeah. I should probably toddle off.
Oh, 55 minutes. Dang.
What do you mean? Anything else on your list, mister? Other than a product launch that you've just committed to and...
product launch. A little bit of Fusion news. I don't know if you saw, there's now a way to use text parametrically in Fusion. So you can like, there's a, one of the formula fields in parameters is now text. And
yes.
You can do kind of like Google Sheet style, like adding of, you know, literally just text with each other. So you can say like, with this field and this field, add them together if this statement. Or just using plain text that passes through parameters, which you couldn't do before.
Cool. That must be good news for you with all your like little labeling products and stuff. Yeah.
It's one of the bigger hurdles of making a new tool tag tower, because even though they're just like one through however, you know, 30 every time, I actually made a script that will regenerate those for us because it was such a pain in the butt.
Yeah. Yeah, but cool.
I don't know if I have to use that.
I didn't realize that was a new thing. I did try and use text the other day. I use Fusion so little now, but I jumped in there the other day to make something and tried to do text. And I was like, what the hell? It's not even like when I type the text, it just gives me numbers. Like I didn't put it in quotation marks. So it didn't let me pass through, like just plain text. Took me a minute to realize that was some new fancy feature going on.
Right, right.
Cool. I kind of resent Fusion every time I log into it at the moment. It's so slow.
Oh.
So slow.
Oh.
So cloud-based. Mm.
Right. They've also, I mean, the other thing, I don't know that we talked about it when it happened, but there's now, I don't know if it's in preview or if it's out yet, but you can do calculation, I think, with manufacturing and other aspects with your GPU instead of just CPU now too, which is the other
cool
big change. And there's dark mode, which woo is better, but the UI is terrible. It's just this horrible contrast, and like it's shocking to me. There's like bright green text on dark blue. It's like too fine of line weight. It's like unreadable most of the time. I don't understand.
Fun. Okay. I should probably go. Toodle off. Thanks.
Toodle off.
Toodle doodles.
Bye.
See you next time.